It was a very happy trip back to Victoria for all those in navy blue on Saturday night as well. The game of the round, the victory took it out, of course. We'll speak about that and a whole lot more on the Fox Football Podcast Monday edition. Daniel Garbia with you. Great to have your company yet again. And alongside me, as per usual, is Simon Hill. Hello, Simon.
Good to see you, Garby. You got a bit of a call, mate, or have you had another big night?
I did have a wedding last night.
No. Are you serious? Another wedding?
I did have
you
another wedding.
You go to one every
night.
Week.
Yeah, it's been a busy month. There's none on the radar after this one. Last night was one of the, unbelievable wedding. The best wedding band I've ever seen.
Really?
The Fundamentalists. They were just
what sort of
incredible.
What genre?
They play everything, but it's like... They're like a DJ band, so they play covers, but the next song rolls into
it's party time down at the Labour Club.
It's a minute and a half of a great song, and then a minute and a half of the next one, and it's just banger after banger after. It was great. So, yeah, the voice is a little bit hoarse this morning, but we'll get through. We'll get through. This man will help me get through. Bruce Chatay. Good to see you, pal.
Good to see you. Good to be back, guys.
Oh, hey, Brucey.
Happy to help you through, Garby.
It was a big weekend, and look, there's a lot of football to get through, but you were involved in a very special occasion on the weekend as well. I was very keen to play in it, but I had the game on Saturday night around the wedding, Western Sydney and Melbourne City, so I couldn't go. But the tribute game for Richard Toombs, five times a Wallaby, who was tragically made a quadriplegic due to football, a footballing injury, was held on the weekend. And you played in it, Bruce, and you were one of several luminaries. I've just seen the photo you've put up on Instagram. Incredible the talent they were able to attract for this wonderful course.
Yeah, and another example of football bringing people together. You know, a lot of Australian legends, if you like, from Adam Goods to Steve Waugh to Adam Peacock. So, look, it was a fantastic event. Good to get everyone there. Very important cause, fundraising for Richard, obviously, who's a great bloke, and a freak accident, you know, playing goalkeeper, collision that you see time and time again between goalkeepers and strikers. And unfortunately, I think it's the first quadriplegic injury for a footballer in this country. I mean, I'm happy to be to be corrected on that, but that is my understanding. So, yeah, very unfortunate circumstances, and just, you know, trying to play a part in raising some funds, because as you can imagine, it would not be easy, that transition, and the cost involved as well would be significant. So well done to Manly United, the Northern Beaches Council who put it together, and to everyone who came out and supported on the day. It was really heartwarming to see that sort of camaraderie.
Well, let's look at some of the people who played in it, because we'd love to get some insight as to how they go as footballers. There's the footballers who are involved: Steve Corica, Graham Arnold, Alex Tobin, who you mentioned, Phil Moss, and a few others. They can all play, we know that. But Steve Waugh was there, Benny Elias was there, Adam Goods, Nick Farr-Jones, former Wallaby, Michael Bevan, the cricketer. Any of them stand out for their footballing ability?
You know, Michael Bevan was unbelievable.
Really?
He was doing little Cruyff turns and everyone on Ufuk Tala, you know. He tricked him a few times. No, he was really good.
Steve Waugh played at a very good level.
Yeah, Steve Waugh was really good. I think he strained his groin early on, but he kept on trucking. Goodsy was really good. Scored
a
phenomenal header.
He was a footballer as a kid as
well. Yeah, scored a phenomenal header. Look, they all love the game. Mm. There's no doubt about that. They all love the game. Everyone had a really good time. And yeah, definitely some multi-talented sports people out there.
Always amazes me. I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, that Steve Waugh was a talented footballer, as we know, but he was the nuggety, gritty batsman, and Mark Waugh was the flamboyant batsman. And apparently, as footballers, Mark Waugh was the sturdy defensive midfielder, no nonsense, and Steve Waugh was the tricky, flamboyant winger.
There you go.
which is quite a contrast. So anyway, wonderful cause.
It was
great
fantastic.
To see so many big names involved.
I hope they do more throughout the year. I'd love to be involved.
Fantastic. Let's get into a bit of a look back at the A-League from the weekend.
It's going to be Toivonen. Oh, it's a beauty. Ola Toivonen scores the A-League's 5,000th goal and breaks the deadlock here at HBF Park, much to the delight of those travelling victory fans.
The A-League's 5,000th goal in front of 17,856 supporters, an A-League record for the Perth Glory, and their second biggest non-finals home crowd after the 18,067 that turned out to watch them against South Melbourne in 1998. We've waited a while for the crowds to come back. We'll get into the game, but they did on the weekend. What a wonderful effort by that football club.
It was brilliant. Well, I was fortunate enough to be there on Saturday night. First time I've been to Perth for quite a while, and I couldn't have picked a better night in terms of atmosphere or the weather. It was just brilliant. I suppose the only thing that was missing from the home fans' point of view was a win. But, you know, I think in terms of filling the stadium, they ran a big campaign during the week, hashtag fill the park. And given that I'm told there was an AFL game on pretty much at the same time, for that many to turn up, I thought was terrific. And they made a great noise. And as I say, the only unfortunate thing from Perth's point of view is that they weren't able to reward that turnout with a win.
Not just any AFL game. I mean, the Eagles' first game after winning the flag, where they unfurled the premiership flag and they still got almost 18,000 at the Glory game. It just shows what can be done. We'll get into how the game panned out in a moment. What can be done with effective promotion in this league? And some clubs do try and they don't always get the rewards for that, but others don't try enough. For 2 weeks over the international break, the Glory pushed this so hard. Fill the park. And it worked. They eventually got into the fans' heads and the fans turned out. It's probably happened on the park quicker than we expected with the Glory this season, the turnaround under Popovich. Probably took a bit longer than I thought it would off the park in terms of getting the supporters back. I thought they would come back a bit quicker considering the way that they're playing. But, you know, it's happening at the right time now and we could be set for a couple of real bumper crowds come finals time.
Yeah, and so we should be. I mean, Perth Glory deserve to play in that sort of, in front of that sort of a crowd every week. They've been playing some phenomenal stuff throughout the season and it just shows what a bit of strategic direction, you know, can do, you know, whether it's a marketing campaign, a way of, you know, getting into to local clubs, to the kids, to the families, to the parents. It's how you appeal to you know, your constituents or your potential fans, if you like, and bring them along to the game. And I think, yeah, look, Perth didn't win, but no one would be going home disappointed with the performance because they actually performed well. They were entertaining. They created a heap of chances. Mm. I think 55 entries into the box. Anyone who knows football knows that this is a team that deserves to be top. Didn't get the result on the night, but will be more than happy to come back and see them win more games throughout the season and definitely will be there come finals.
Totally agree with that. I'd add one or two other things, not just about a strategy in terms of marketing, but it's also, clearly it's about winning as well. You know, fans want to see a winning team, but it's about having really good players on the park, not in terms of just your own team, but the opposition as well. There was a lot of Japanese that I saw there on Saturday night to watch Keisuke Honda, Toivonen, of course, as well. So they had big play, Castro, you know, Keo, even though he started on the bench, which is unbelievable given he scored 13 goals this season. So, you know, good players, but also, and I think this is really important, context and narrative. Yeah. There was something at stake, you know, on and too often, I've mentioned this before, too often in the A-League, we have games that don't necessarily mean too much because of the top six final system, because we don't have promotion and relegation. A lot of the games, you know, I know as a commentator, you're looking and going, right, okay, what's the context of this weekend's game that I'm doing? And often that there isn't enough of one. And I think that was really important on Saturday night because Perth know that they're very close to the premiership. Victory are one of the teams that can take it away from them and are going to push them in the final. So that, there was that little bit of extra edge that we see week in, week out, you know, in Europe where you've got battles for top six or the championship or against relegation, etc. So I think that was important. Overall, I totally agree with Bruce's comments. Perth played very, very well. It was just one of those nights for them. Couldn't find a way through. Credit to Victory. They defended like lions and took their opportunities when they got them, two set pieces. And, you know, maybe laid down a little bit of a marker for the finals. Yeah. We're the champions. That's what they said on Saturday night. Hey, if you want this trophy, you come and take it off us because we're still the best team in the country.
They're still the best at doing that, aren't they? Just galvanising and sending a message and uniting for these missions. And Kevin Muscat loves playing an underdog card. Even when they're not the underdog overall, he finds a way to channel that energy for one game like we saw in the finals last year. From a player's point of view, Bruce, how much of a difference can that make mentally come finals, a win like that?
Massive difference. And I think from all the years I played A-League, and it's the same still today, the one team you don't want to face in the finals, doesn't matter if they finish sixth, first, fifth, wherever, is Melbourne Victory. Why? Because they're a big club, a good, well-organised run club, tend to have very good coaches at the helm, and always tend to have a very strong squad. A squad with a Toivonen, a Honda, a Troisi, a Barbaroussis. You do not, because if they're on, there's probably no stopping them. You know, doesn't matter if they got pumped 3-0 the week before and they finished the season sixth. If you play them in that first knockout game, chances are, you know, they've got big name players for big games. And that's, you know, that might, Muscat's challenge might be motivating them when it's not a big game.
Yeah.
But what, on the flip side, when it is a big game, he knows he can rely on his players to deliver something big.
Do you know what I love about Victory as a club? They take the responsibility of being a big club very seriously. Every year they bring in marquee players. I know Sydney FC probably do the same. They're probably the only other club that does. They know they have a responsibility to that big fan base that they have to be challenging every year. And if they're not, there's big questions being asked. Some of the other clubs don't do that and should do, because they have a responsibility as well, not just to their own supporter base, but to the league, because we need more than one or two big clubs. Victory do it really, really well on the field and off it.
The Wellington Phoenix are a club that's been questioned ad nauseum over the last few years, but gee, they've got it together this season under Mark Rudin. It might be a different challenge for them when it comes to the finals, because they're foreign to that over the last few seasons, but they're not a club you want to face right now, especially in New Zealand, and they could have a home final. Brilliant against Newcastle on the weekend, blitz them, and David Williams with a hat-trick. He was superb. One of his goals just out of this world.
And David Williams is that good a player. What he's doing now doesn't surprise me in the slightest, because he's always been a very good finisher. Right foot, left foot, heading. You know, he's got that ability.
Why hasn't his career kicked on then, Bruce?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one. You know, football is a minefield. It's hard. There's a lot of variables. You know, I did an interview the other day talking about tertiary studies, and I was saying it's easy to just do normal, in inverted commas, work, because generally, if you work hard, you get the result. It's they sit parallel with each other. Hard work, results. In football, you see a lot of players who work hard and don't get the result, never win a grand final, you know, never get a chance to represent their country or whatever the peak of their career could be, or a career kicking on. There's agents, there's injuries, there's, you know, a whole host of variables that are out of your control.
Coaches who might not fancy
coaches,
you as a player.
Whatever it might be, right? And a lot of subjective, you know, it's a very subjective game. So hard work doesn't always line up. And look, for me, Willow's a talented player. Could he have had a better career? I think so. I mean, he had a good leg up at Bronby. You know, he was actually playing at a very young age. You'd hope from there he'd kick on. Hasn't happened. But in saying that, he's having a fantastic season. And, you know, Krishna was out and it didn't really matter, because David Williams was in there banging in the goal.
Similar register. And I know he's had his injury problems over the last 12 months, which may, in fact, probably longer than that, which might explain a lot of it. I remember when Nathan Burns broke onto the scene and we all went, wow. You know, there was the usual, he's the next Harry Kewell line. And again, it's not really happened for Nathan, has it? He wasn't in the squad at the week. I presume that's injury related. I don't think he's been in the squad for a couple of weeks now. Looks as though his sort of career's, you know, drifting away. He's 30 now. It's such a pity, isn't it? But it sort of underlines what you say, that things can go in a much different direction to the way you expect them to.
And again, Burns is another one I played with growing up.
It was always Bruce and Burns, wasn't it? Yeah, right. Burst on the scene.
I think we're in New South Wales Institute of Sport together, AIS, obviously started Adelaide together as well. And another one, hardworking, very, very talented player. I mean, seriously talented player. But again, you know, he had issues with his knee. The move to Korea didn't help him. That's when he had real problems with his knee. And he's been carrying that his whole career. You know, the funny thing is, a lot of people don't realise that, A, players never play at 100%, and B, they're normally carrying something the whole season or dealing with past injuries. And unfortunately for Burnsy, that's been the problem, I think, this year. You know, you got to manage your knee. Then after, you know, now you're 30 years old, you're not 21 spring chicken anymore. So you know, can you do a double field session? Probably not. You need to sort of be managed. And then, you know, the way Wellington's season has kicked on, to be fair to Mark Rudin, like, why would you throw him in? Oh, I mean, exactly. In term, obviously, but there's another player that you want when finals come around. Because for big games, it's a Burns. He can go and dribble three or four players and score that wonder goal and unlock defences and things like that. So what an asset to have to be able to use come finals time. But, yeah, another example of how, you know, hard work and dedication doesn't necessarily translate into, you know, the result.
Sorry, we went off on a tangent there, didn't we? But Wellington, 18 goals in their last three games they've scored.
an interesting tangent, but yeah, it all underlines just how well that club's going. They haven't played a home final in 4 years. They're now in the top four and looking at good things for that. And they've turned that stadium into a bit of a fortress, which we always talk about that stadium. Does it work for football? Does it not? It's a tough place to go, but they didn't really seem to play that well there either. Now they've made it a fortress. And
9,000 there at the weekend as well.
Excellent.
Not bad.
So building well too. The club that you and Nathan Burns used to star for, Adelaide, had a really important win on the weekend. Their first goal in four matches. You just needed an ugly win. It was a wonderful strike from Isaias, but they just needed to grind one out, didn't they? Especially in wake of Marco Kurz's departure, to show that everything's still going to be smooth sailing despite that.
Yeah, hopefully. I think everything's still kosher. Just speaking to the boys, that's one uncertainty that's now out of their minds. Everyone knows where they stand, and you know, there's nothing worse than uncertainty. You know, give me good news, give me bad news, but
give me news.
Yeah, give me news. Tell me something. So I think that helps. Everyone wants to finish the season on a high. An important win away from home against a Mariners side who have a new coach and are relatively rejuvenated. So not the easy beats, again, inverted commas, that you probably saw when they got demolished 8-1 or whatever it was against Wellington. A very credible win. When your team's in a rut, it's all about the points. And at this part, at the business end of the season, it's all about getting the points. You know, it doesn't matter how you get them. You just need to win those games because it's a momentum sort of league. Perth have done well and have carried that wave. Mariners have done poorly and have continued to do poorly. You don't see too many jumping up and down or inconsistent in their results. So it's important to come into the finals on a good run of form in terms of results.
Apart from Melbourne City.
Yeah, well, why don't we get onto them now? I mean, the top six does seem locked away. It'd take a miracle for any of Newcastle or Western Sydney to jump in now. But geez, Melbourne City. I mean, the gap between their best and their worst is just so alarming. And it just happens so often. Luke Bratton after the game, after their 3-0 loss to Western Sydney, another good result for them at ANZ Stadium on Saturday night. He was lost for words. He couldn't explain why it was the case. Maybe he wanted to say something else and held back a little bit. But it's just a nonsense that this keeps happening over and over.
The interesting thing for me, it struck me when I saw the lineup on Saturday night, just how many changes it seems from the outside that Warren Joyce seems to make week in, week out. He appears to change his personnel. Now, I know he had an injury with Jamie McLaren at the weekend, which is not his fault. Scott Jamieson didn't play. Was he?
Yeah, toe injury.
Toe injury. There we go. So injuries obviously don't help, and Ollie Roux selections, I get all that. The stats are that he's named an unchanged lineup only once this season, which is the joint fewest along with Adelaide United. And I think that does go some way to explaining why there's this inconsistency, because and it's not just the personnel. Sometimes they change the system a lot as well. You know, I think Harrison Delbridge was out on the left-hand side. He's played right back. He's played centre back. I think he even played as a midfielder one week. I don't know. It just seems to be, you know, Richie Delatt right back. Then he's further forward. Then he's a central striker. I know because they, you know, the Fornaroli thing, et cetera, et cetera. But it just seems to be a little bit all over the place, as though he's trying to find that right blend. I think Berengue played as a striker at the weekend. So it must be a bit confusing for the players. And I'm not saying that's the whole reason, but I think it's maybe one of the reasons. And all that on the back of, you know, two games where they led Perth 2-0 and probably should have won that game. They fell in a bit of a hole at the end. And then beat Sydney FC 2-0 away from home. You thought, all right, okay, they're getting back to something, you know, approaching their best. And then they go and put in that sort of performance against the Wanderers. It's, again, this is not a new thing that I'm saying. I think everybody has sort of pointed to this. What is the identity of that team? What is it? What does it represent? What does it want to be? I don't think anybody can actually put their finger on it. Can you, Bruce?
No, I can't. And that's another narrative they need to sell if they want to get fans to games.
Well, you spoke about it before. Big clubs have responsibilities.
Yeah.
Well, they don't sell it to their fans enough. They don't recruit enough big players. We've spoken about that. One win in eight. Look, there are big question marks over Warren Joyce. And he walked off halfway through a question of mine on the weekend, which I just thought was unnecessary. I asked him about, and I thought about it, and for me it was a justified question, asked him about the links to Manchester United after Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came out and was so praiseworthy of him in wake of Ollie now getting the job full time. I thought it was a justified question to ask him, what does he make of those links? I mean, he's a manager of a football club here. He's been linked to a move back to his former club where he's held in high regard. It seemed to me like a justified question. As you know, Simon, you think about these things when you ask them. You don't ask questions willy-nilly. I thought about asking before the game and I thought, no, that's not fair. He's preparing for a game. You don't ask about that before a game. So I asked it afterwards. Didn't even let me finish my answer and he walked off. What's wrong with just saying, I'm focused here on Melbourne City, don't need to talk about that, and smile? Mm. Wouldn't your fans feel better about the situation if you did that? I know he's disappointed. He's just lost a game. I know he's committed to the club, but I don't know. It's just another one of those interactions where you go, he's just rubbing people up the wrong way, unfortunately.
Well, look, in fairness to Warren, I think all the attention has been on Warren this season, and a lot of that is justified. But I think there's a bigger picture at play here. And again, it comes back to what do the City Football Group want Melbourne City to be? Now, I looked at New York City, their roster this season that's just started in the MLS. I think they're three or four games in. They have spent around $20 million on two players, a guy from Romania, Mitrita, I think his name is, and a Brazilian called Heber. I don't know how you pronounce it. $20 million on two designated players. That's just transfer fees, by the way. So they've obviously got ambition to a certain degree, you know, for that club. Melbourne City could do that. They could theoretically do that. Now, we know that there's, you know, the independent A-League is swirling around, and that's maybe the reason. Maybe they will next season when we have an independent A-League. I hope they do, because they need to generate some sort of interest in that club, because at the moment, I don't know what it is. You know, it's not playing great football. It's not being particularly successful. It's certainly not attracting crowds. Mm. They look like, and I'm a Man City fan, you know that, they look like Man City light at the moment to me. You know, the sky blue jerseys, the running out to Oasis, Wonderwall. It's great for me. I'm a Manc. But how does that resonate with people here? And if it doesn't, what else are they using to try and draw people in? I can't see a whole lot there at the moment.
I can see City in a bit of a holding pattern, like a lot of A-League clubs, just waiting for this independence to come
maybe
in. And unfortunately, for the fans, maybe for the players as well, it's you know, got the bit of inertia in the game in terms of it's not really moving forward. So, look, I think, you know, when the model's broken, as everyone's admitted to in recent times, why are you going to throw money after it? In the MLS, it's gone all guns blazing. There's a reason for that investment to be made. Maybe here they're waiting for it to become independent and then they can justify that investment. I mean, I don't know if that is what it is, but from the outside looking in, that is what it looks
just
like.
I mean, on that, let's just pick out one single thing about the league at the moment. Now, there's been a lot of talk over the last week. I think the Sydney Morning Herald broke a story over the weekend that, you know, maybe Network 10 are interested in acquiring the free-to-air rights. As of next season, we know they show one game at the moment, but, you know, maybe a bigger package. Would you not be trying to stimulate that interest and create a bit of competitive tension in the market even now? You know the independent A-League's coming, all right? We don't know exactly what it looks like at the moment. We might even find out today, Monday, as we speak. That was the deadline, wasn't it? 31st of March, 1st of April. But would you not be going, this is the moment where we look to get people interested and try and build some momentum for the league? At the moment, it seems everybody's sat on the sidelines going, well I'm not
exactly
doing it.
Right.
I'm not doing it. Yeah. Who's going to do it?
Exactly. Well, I think that's what's happening. And I think, you know, if Channel 10 do want to take a free-to-air component and put it on their main station or make a bigger package out of it, then you will see the clubs, you know, it would be in their interest then to go and invest in these players.
So.
At the moment, their business cases are obviously showing and their models are showing, guys, it's actually not in our interest to do any more than what we're doing now. So let's just keep it status quo.
The Wanderers will have some momentum going into next season. If only they started the season like this, undefeated in five of their last six. I mean, they'd probably be top of the table. And you know, there's some energy now ahead of that move to Parramatta. Their fans can start to feel enthused about things under Marcus Babbel, which is exciting. We'll see what happens with Kwame Yeboah and Mitchell Duke next season. But they've been wonderful additions, of course, to that team, and it's helped turn things around. Oriel Riera showed some passion on the weekend. I think he was trying to send a bit of a message. I do care about this club, the way that he celebrated, although I doubt he'll be there next season. But, you know, that is something to look forward to, because it's only one club, but you think their fans will turn out in droves for that first game of the new stadium next season, considering the form path that they're on right now. Sydney FC had a good win on Friday night against Brisbane. The defending from the Brisbane Roar, though, I could not believe the standard of some of that defending for an A-League club, a professional football club. It was diabolical.
Well, that's been Brisbane's story all season, hasn't it? They've had a lot of injuries, of course, which haven't helped. But let's be honest, the sooner this campaign is done and dusted for Brisbane Roar, the better. And the key, obviously, for them is to get this new coach in place. I mean, it's taken how many months since John Aloisi resigned? December. Again, we're still hearing Robbie Fowler's the hot favourite. Well, if he's the hot favourite, let's announce him.
He's down to the last two or three. That we know okay. for sure.
Again, another example of inertia in the league. You know, nothing worse than uncertainty, guys. If you don't know what the future looks like, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. Then why are you going to put your money? Why are you going to sink your money into something that you don't know what it's going to look like?
What do we make of Robbie Fowler if he gets the job? I mean, this is a guy who's never coached a team in his own right for a long period of time.
He coached in Thailand for a little while,
so his experience is limited. Look, I like Robbie Fowler. He's obviously a big name. I'd love him to do well. I think it'd be great for the league if he did well. I think it's a massive risk and a big question mark for any A-League club to put someone in on limited experience.
It is, and there's no doubt you're right. You could say, how much experience did Steve Corica have of leading a senior team?
But he was assistant for a while. And so Kevin Musk. They've done their apprenticeship.
Absolutely. Well, from what I'm led to believe, Robbie Fowler has been working with the academy team at Liverpool. Now, I'm not saying that that's the same as a senior side, but obviously he does have some coaching experience. Look, the proof will be in the pudding. I think it's understandable in many ways that Brisbane are interested in him. They feel that perhaps a big name might just galvanise the club, might attract attention. I'm sure it will. Can he coach? I don't know. Do any of us know? That's for Brisbane to determine. I wouldn't be surprised if they went for a Marco Kurtz type figure. Or somebody who does have experience. And remember, the A-League, in terms of, you know, squad limits, salary caps, marquee players, etc., it's a very different league to a lot of the leagues around the world. So you've got to be nimble as a coach as well as talented. I don't know. I'm sort of a bit 50-50 with it, Bruce. What about you?
Yeah, look, I think it's a gamble. Yeah. It's definitely a gamble.
He hasn't got the job yet, by the way. But he's in the final two or three, we understand.
Well, it's definitely a gamble. I think a safer bet would be a Marco Kurtz, or even coaches that have been coaching successfully in a place like the MLS, because they know the nuances and the intricacies of balancing a salary cap, managing a salary cap, limited number of players, substitutions, and all the other things that come with it.
At least Robbie's played it, so he does know that system, doesn't he? He's aware of it.
That's right, yeah. So, look, he's played here before. It's a big-name signing if that is who they're going to get. But, again, there's some good candidates out there. Marco's one of them, Robbie Fowler another one. And I think it's quite good for the A-League when you got people with such big names and so many things that they could be doing in their life, choosing to come to the A-League and give it a real good go.
He was very close to getting the Perth Glory job, but that's because Tony Sage is a close link with him from when he played in Perth. Tony, from what I understand, had to be almost talked down from the tree and sold the Popovich option, and obviously that was a smart move.
But he's glad he did.
And I very much doubt he regrets that, that's for sure. But he was close to taking the reins at the Glory last season, so we'll wait and see. But it is a risk. They put an assistant with him who's very experienced, who knows the Australian landscape. Maybe it can work better in that regard if Robbie Fowler is successful. So, yeah, Sydney FC, an important win. They could cruise at times, and they've got De Jong and De Silva, and they're coming back
what
now.
A bench.
And
what a bench they had
they're just
on Friday.
Starting starting to get things right at the right time, potentially, if De Jong can stay fit, massive if, of course.
Well, this game coming up against Victory next weekend, the Big Blue at the SCG, I think it is. I mean, that's huge for both clubs.
Yep.
Yes, both could still win the Premiership. I still think Perth will win that. But it's about finishing top two, and particularly as both have Champions League commitments, that week off could be crucial for one of the two, and there's only a point between them. So, I mean, it's, you know, but Victory have got three away games. They've played Perth, they've got the job done there. They've got Sydney FC away, then they go to Guangzhou Evergrande in the Asian Champions League. Wow. I mean, that's an away day treble from hell. If they can come through that with, you know, three good results, then, yeah, Victory, they might be my tip, actually, in the finals. Maybe.
Could do. I mean, look, it's a hard run for Victory. I think in terms of Sydney FC, what a bench. Like you said, it's perfect time to get all those players back. Yeah. They would have been loving the week off last weekend. Perfect time to get their players back. Sim De Jong, fantastic impact. Coming back in, scoring a goal, immediate impact. Sydney FC are looking dangerous. I mean, they got through that sort of rough patch. You know, Brillante wanted to leave. He wanted to go to South Korea, so he wasn't in the squad. Obviously, De Jong was injured. De Silva was injured. A lot of important key players that they signed early in the season that all of a sudden weren't available. And now to have that coming on back on board, it's like having two or three new signings again.
Jeez, you flip quickly. I was at a function with you last week and you said glory for the title.
Was it in Perth?
Yeah, you're on to be fair, I did say that at the start of the season that I thought Perth would win it, and I'm gonna stick by
he's,
that. But
he's
I,
talking
I think,
about the plate and then the
plate.
Thanks for helping me out, Chris.
Who finishes second then if you had to pick right now, Victory or Sydney?
I think Sydney.
Victory.
Depends on the result this weekend, but I reckon whoever wins that, if it's a draw, I think Sydney. If Victory win it, then probably Victory.
Victory for me. They just showed on the weekend. They can just fire up like no one else for the big games. When the challenge is on, they just lift. Anyway, it sets it up for a wonderful final series. Still a big month of football to go in that regard. And a big 4 or 5 weeks left in the Premier League too. It was another belter of a weekend in the title race. Thank you, Hugo. Thank you, Toby, for getting Liverpool over the line, literally.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, Hugo.
It was another bad mistake from the Spurs keeper. He probably hasn't had a great season, and maybe a bit of a letdown since the World Cup and that triumph with France. But he had a chance to collect the cross initially, didn't come. And then it's a solid header from Salah, but one that a keeper of his quality should catch. And if he's not going to catch it, how you could parry it down to your defender's legs, yeah, is a bad error. So big win for Liverpool.
For all the conspiracy theories surrounding Liverpool and Man City, how many late goals have Liverpool had over the last few weeks?
Well, what conspiracy theories?
Well, you know, we keep hearing from Liverpool fans, oh, everybody wants City to win the title and everything's going against us. Are you serious? Didn't you score it? Was it 96-minute winner against Burnley and now a goalkeeping error and all that sort of
just
stuff?
Just shows how hard we're having to battle with all of that against us to still get over the line. It was a big win. Spurs were pretty good, I thought, in the second half and had a big chance to win it through Sissoko. The Reds had their chances as well. I don't think Liverpool's at their best right now. Before the international break against Fulham, they weren't. They certainly weren't as fluent as they would have liked to have been against Spurs, but up against a very good team and still played some pretty good football. It's just every minute at the moment is tense. I mean, City went 2-0 up against Fulham early, so you could relax a bit, but it's just for everyone. If you're not involved in the game for a City fan, you're watching that and it's just every point means so much.
Well, the interesting thing obviously is this game in hand, which keeps fluctuating.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nip and tuck, isn't it, between City, who take the lead, and then Liverpool strike back. It's a fascinating title race. And City play on Wednesday at home to Cardiff. So, you know, we've got the chance to go back above Liverpool and then
which
we'll be back on 32 games, so six left after that. It's going to be fascinating. I think for Liverpool, that was an important win because that's one of the Reds' tough games out of the way. I think they've still got to play Chelsea. City, though, have got to play Spurs, and not just in the Premier League, but obviously the two legs in the Champions League quarterfinals as well. So they're three massive games, and we've got to go to United in the Manchester Derby. So I think there's a few twists and turns to come yet. Klopp has actually said over the weekend he doesn't see City losing another game, so it's incumbent upon Liverpool to keep winning. That might be a bit of psychology.
Yeah,
I don't
I'm sure
know.
It is.
But it's, I mean, what a what a finale to the season. I mean, this time last year it was done and dusted, so you know it's good to have a race. City, although I hope we win it.
City were wonderful against Fulham in the. It was like watching the Harlem Globetrotters at times. The quality and the standard of their football in that first half, the touches of Bernardo Silva and David Silva and Aguero and. I mean, even as a Liverpool fan in the title race, you sit back and you admire it because it's football of the highest quality you could want to watch.
And that's why I think City's going to win it because they've got that to fall back on. That's their fallback. You know what I mean? They don't revert to anything else. They don't know any other way. And it's a trademark of Guardiola coach teams. They fall back to this high level, high intensity football. And it's generally too much for their opponents to deal with. They create multiple chances. They always have you under pressure. So, look, obviously, like Simon said, I agree with him, a few more twists and turns to come and a lot to play for. I mean, Tottenham have dropped off massively and now between third, which is Tottenham, and sixth, which is Chelsea, there's a lot to play for. Everyone wants to make that top four. Everyone wants to get those Champions League spots.
Fernandinho's return is also potentially key for City. He came off the bench against Fulham. He's such an important player for Guardiola.
I do think City have the edge and at this point in time we'll win it. But you know, Liverpool are just doing what they need to do and City have that game against United coming up. And United, as you said, Bruce, are well and truly in this race for a top four. And as much as their fans don't want them to affect the title so Liverpool win it, their coaches and their players want to get
Hobson's
back in
choice for them.
Want to get back in the Champions League badly. Yeah. They need to, and at the moment it's Tottenham in third. Arsenal can jump to third if they beat Newcastle tomorrow morning. All of a sudden, Spurs going into this new stadium they forked out fortunes for might not have Champions League football next season. In order to welcome it in, I mean, they're massive stakes for them and for United. So that top four race all of a sudden has just become epic.
Yeah, it has, and equally fascinating, of course, at the other end of the table. Huddersfield, the first to drop. Fulham will probably join them. They could even join them as early as this week. And then it's one from three or four. I think probably Cardiff are the favourites to go down, particularly as they play against City away this week, which in all likelihood they will lose. I suppose that opens up the question. I'm interested in Bruce's thoughts on this. Aaron Moy.
Which we've
does
discussed.
He drop down to the? We have discussed it before, trio. But does he drop down to the Championship, or does he say no? I'm at the point of my career now where I need to be playing top flight football, and if so, where does he go?
Look, if he drops down to the Championship, I think it'll be very hard to get back up into a Premier League team. I think he's definitely good enough to stay in the Premier League. Where does he go? Again, a whole heap of variables. And I think I said this last time we spoke about him. There's just so many variables in terms of how a signing happens these days, especially at that level. So Aaron Moy's a good player, but he's dime a dozen when it comes to Premier League. You know, he's up against the rest of the world. So look, he's obviously got the Premier League experience. He's had a fantastic time in the Championship in the season he played there with Huddersfield, obviously. I'd like to see him to go to a bigger team. I think him in a better club, better team, maybe in terms, not Huddersfield, I'm sure it's a great club, but in terms of stature and footballing ability, I think he shines a bit more in that sort of environment. If he could get to even an Everton, a Leicester, you know, these
West
clubs,
Ham.
West Ham, that are, you know, from 10th sort of up, you know, maybe 12th, but always generally safe. And you know, long term Premier League clubs, I think you see a very good Aaron Moy. Mm. Does he play at those clubs though? Mm. That's the tricky part, you know, because when you are in the prime of your career, you don't want to be at Man U sitting on the bench. You'd rather be at Huddersfield playing week in, week out.
I'd be surprised if a club in that bracket doesn't come in for him and put in a 10 to 15 million pound bid, and Huddersfield does the right thing and says, all right, we'll let you go. Mm. I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen considering his output over the last two seasons. Huddersfield, only the second side in Premier League history to be relegated in March after Derby County in 2007-2008. It shows how poor of a season they've had. Tim Cahill officially retired from all football on the weekend. He'd had a little stint after retiring from the Socceroos in India. He's now said that's it for him. So the tributes continue, but as they should. So we now officially say farewell to Timmy as a footballer.
It's the end of an era, isn't it? Which leaves only Mark Milligan left from the 2006 World Cup squad, unless I'm missing one other. Look, for me, he's been the best ever. Not necessarily the most talented socceroo ever. I think you'd probably look at Harry Kewell or Mark Viduka or somebody else for that. Maybe a Ray Barts going further back in time. But in terms of longevity, consistency, and most crucial of all, impact on the biggest stage, Tim was the best ever. Four World Cups, three or four Asian Cups, AFC Asian Cup winner, Oceania Nations Cup winner. You know, he did everything. Was just absolutely sensational, and it'll be a long, long time before his record of international goals is beaten.
Interesting that he announced his best ever team of players that he played with on the weekend.
Were you in it, Bruce?
No. Not surprised.
I think you were just edged out by Mark Viduka, who was up front. But he left out Harry Kewell. He picked Stephen Pienaar over Harry Kewell. That was an interesting one, I thought. Do you reckon there might be a little, maybe a personal slant to that one?
I think we're digging for things that aren't there now.
I'm just posing the question.
Yeah, I know. Digging for things that aren't there. I think that's what Joycey thought of when you
That's his new nickname, Digger Gar.
That was John Barnes' nickname, so I'm in good company.
But no, I think Simon's right. He's the best ever in terms of impact. You know, everyone loves Timmy Cahill. Not everyone, because, you know, when you're at that level, you're always going to have your detractors. That's a sign of the level that you're at. But look, in terms of the goals he scored at the World Cup, especially in 2006, that really, not put the Socceroos on the map, but really made it, you know, they were moments that when you ask a football fan, Timmy Cahill is probably, you know, as well as Aloisi with the penalty goal, these are probably the two guys who have had the longest lasting, most emotional sort of impact on the fans.
They transcended the sport.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, Timmy took it to the next level in terms of the way he marketed himself, the way he did more than football. He really used football as a conduit to a whole range of other things that he got involved in. And I'm looking forward to see what he does next. I know he's going to do his coaching and spend time with his family, which is what he said. But, you know, everything he does with full commitment. So it excites me to see what he does next, whether that's coaching or something else. Hopefully he stays in the sport.
What always amazed me about Timmy when he was coming through, if you were sent as a scout to go watch him play, oh, this bloke in Millwall scoring some goals, go have a look at him for me. We're pretty keen. If you were a scout, you would have come back and you would have gone, okay, he's an attacking midfielder, central attacking midfielder. His passing's, like, he can pass the ball, but he doesn't open up defences with
the passes. He's not defence-winning passes, no.
Is he quick? I mean, he's not slow, but he's not quick. Can he dribble? I mean, he's got a good touch, but he doesn't really beat players on his own. Can he shoot? He's good inside the area. I wouldn't say he's a weapon from outside the box. So you're a coach reading that scout report. You'd go,
he's pretty ordinary.
So why on earth would I sign him as an attacking midfielder? And you go, all right, well, he's good in the air. Okay, that's great. I don't really need a number 10 to be dominant in the air. What is it about this guy? And as a scout, you'd say, I don't know what it is, but he wins you games. He just finds a way to win you games and be in the right moment when it matters most.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the reporter come back and say, look, he's got no outstanding attributes like, X player or Y player. But you know what? He's a game winner. Yeah. What other attribute do you want? I don't care what he does.
And in between his ears.
That's right. If he pops up and scores game-winning goals, which he did, capable of scoring spectacular goals. You know, there was the bicycle kick he scored against Chelsea. The headers. I mean, you just put him in the team. Mm. Not because he's going to make defensive-winning passes or he's going to have unbelievable dribbles or anything like that. No. You put him in the team. Let everyone else do that. But he's going to score the winning goal in the 80th.
He was one of the smartest footballers inside the penalty area. And a lot of that was to do with the coaching he got as a kid. I wrote a story on it years ago about Johnny Doyle, the former Socceroo, who basically used, what do they call it, biometrics and kinesiology, is it called?
Yes.
Anyway, all this sort of technique, you know, sports science, how it built up his strength in his legs. taught him how to use gravitational force to bump off defenders to get that extra leap, which is why, although he's only, what, 5 foot nine, 5 foot 10, he got such a prodigious leap, worked on his timing, how to rotate in the air, barreling, they call it. I don't know if you've done any of this stuff, but I mean, Timmy did all that when he was a kid and obviously put it into practice, you know, in big games. And that's why he was able to score so many, because of being smart between the years. He wasn't, as I say, the most naturally gifted footballer, but he worked with whatever talent he had and wrung every last little drop out of it. And good on him. He had a fantastic career.
I'd say good luck to Timmy with whatever he does next, but he doesn't need luck. He just makes things happen, as we know. Let's get into some Twitter questions. There's some really good ones this week. This one from William Doughty. Bruce, you might have some thoughts on this. What are your thoughts, he asks, on team songs for A-League clubs? I'm hearing the Glory and Wellington have them. That's from William. And that they're inspired by the NPL, where they are prevalent. And the same with Sunday League football. Everyone's got a song they sing after a win, yet we don't see it in the A-League.
Well, no, when I first came to Adelaide United, we had a song too.
What was the song?
Oh, I can't remember. But we did have a song, you know, Angelo Costanzo, Michael Valkanis, you know, even Carl Veer.
I can see Ange being a bit of a crooner.
You know, they well, I don't know about a crooner, but they enjoyed, like, you know, singing after a win. And a lot of clubs had the song, because I remember when you lost, you'd always hear them singing the song sort of next door. I think that it sort of waned a bit as the league matured, if you like. Wellington still got the song. It's good in terms of team camaraderie, morale, and it forces players. You know, sometimes you win and there's players that are still unhappy, but it sort of forces them to get in with the vibe, and everyone feels a part of it. It's a good thing. I'm not a fan of it, but like you know, if you win the grand final, yeah, go sing to your heart's delight. But you know, I think now the game's at a stage where it's always, yeah, enjoy this moment, this brief moment, but, you know, it's all about recovery, getting back up to speed, and the next game, and the next game, and the next game. So singing's not really a thing for me. But
what's your singing voice like, Bruce?
It's shocking. So
yeah? as bad as my voice now.
I'm not going to give you any previews if that's what you're hinting towards. But, yeah, look, I think if a club wants to do it, it's part of their identity, do it, but I wouldn't try to force it as a thing.
It's just odd because it's a part of sport culture in Australia, whatever the code, and it is massive in amateurs and NPL. Everyone does it.
That's also the thing, because our game's so global.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd find...
That's probably the reason why, because it's not a professional football thing, is it? You don't see Barcelona and singing a song after a win. It's just Campione and that's it.
Can I tell you, I was down in Melbourne on Friday night doing a function for Heidelberg United. Some of the old legends from the 70s and 80s, Gary Cole, Jimmy Campbell, Jim O'Reilly, the big Scottish centre-half, and Kenny Taylor. And we did a panel chat, and at the end of it, Jim O'Reilly got up and sung Saturday Night at the Movies. And apparently that's one of the songs they used to sing on the coach back from wherever it was back in the days of the NSL.
Fantastic. This one's from Matthew Rastichich. Should there be an elimination of NPL matches on the same night an A-League side in that state is playing? For example, Victory playing a Friday night, no NPL games and vice versa.
Well, look, there's definitely a lot of... fractured relationships that need to be healed
It's not a bad suggestion.
It's a fantastic suggestion, and it all makes sense. But you know, there's a lot of work to be done. Let's just say to make that a thing, because I dare say there's a heap of NPL clubs who don't care if Victory is playing or not.
I would say the majority.
Exactly.
But they need to start caring, and the FFA needs to make them care by giving them a reason to. Like, we're going to look after you. And look after the A-League clubs as well, but not putting games on at the same time.
They need to be included.
All comes back to strategy. Yeah. All comes back to managing relationships. All comes back to the things that aren't happening and that is why we have the situation that we have with the public bickering and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
As an example, I'm sure the AFL could do that tomorrow. For us, it would be a complete process, because there's been a lot of toxic sort of build up of emotions, and something that needs to be healed should be healed. And look, it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes complete sense. But then you need those NPL teams, like Simon said, to feel included. Yeah. I mean, I've been watching those forums, mate. talk about copping and ear bashing everywhere you go. So a lot of people don't feel included. A lot of people are, you know, we got a fractured game.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And can we talk about AFLW Grand Final in Adelaide the other day? I put out a tweet. It was fantastic. I mean, we got 55. I mean, the stadium only holds about 55, 56. We had 55 at our grand final. They had 53 last year.
It is free and entry. That needs to be stated.
There's a whole myriad of reasons why. All I want to say is they're doing it right. And because they're doing it right, they're going to get people onto it. 53,000. Because people are onto it, they're going to get hooked on it. So when they start to charge, it's, you know, people might be up in arms for a week, but they're going to fork out and pay for it.
Yeah.
Because, and mate, the tech companies do it every time they create something. You know, in a couple of years, you're going to have ads on Instagram, a video that you've got to watch for 10 seconds, going to do your head in, but you're so hooked into Instagram because it's been free for so long, that marketing space, the data, there's a whole range of things. All I'm trying to say is that what the AFL are doing, and I know we always talk about we don't have money, we can't afford to do it free. Yeah, well, these guys are willing to invest. And that's the thing. You have to be willing to actually, you can't just come with your hand out for things. You got to say, oh, no, we're not coming with our hand out. We're actually putting our hard earned, or we've got a team, or we've employed these people to whatever. Or so we've got some skin in the game. You're putting some skin in the game because it's got social and inclusive and diversity and all the things we ramble on about our game that it comes with football. Governments want to be involved. It's just a whole thing, man. At the moment, it's just a complete melange. It's a complete mess.
Well, the new board's come in and said, we want to bring the game together. That's been their number one mantra is inclusivity and getting everyone connected
unity.
On the same page and unity. So that there you go. There's an idea, a great idea from one of our listeners. It's probably been mentioned before in dispatches.
Yep.
Well said. And that's one for them to follow up on. From Josh Watson, thoughts on either adding the proper amount of subs to 7 in the A-League or having the guest marquee change to a season rather than 14 games? I think the reason why we don't have 7 subs is cost. Another one of those cost things. It's too much. You have to put more players on your squad list and it costs extra to take them around the country for games. So that's part of the reason why.
We had this argument when we were doing collective bargaining agreements. Yeah, well, every time they came up, this is the pie and the pie is the pie. But I think we've got to start thinking about, can we try grow our pie, please, guys? Because if everything's going to fall back to we don't have money to do it, then what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like, let's try and find another way. I mean,
but that money has to come from somewhere, isn't it?
That's right. So you've got to generate money.
Yeah.
A good way to generate money is generating interest and going to people and saying, yes. Well, there's 53,000 people willing to come here.
I agree. Well, this is what we were saying about earlier with, you know, just to use them as an example, sorry, Melbourne City, but, you know, they have the potential to be able to do that, to try and attract more people to their stadium.
It's easier said than done, no doubt.
Of course,
it was easy to do.
But you said, hang on, there's not a business proposition for them there. So you can't have it both ways.
Well, that's right.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I'm saying about the fractures in the game. Our game's unique in the terms of discontent. Like, it takes some serious effort to get this many people going in this many different directions. So that's what I'm saying. As long as it's like this, then...
And for mine, with the guest marquee spot, if you're going to land a Zlatan or a Fernando Torres, who cares what the rules are? Just the way the game is now, just keep them for the season,
just
please.
Just get rid of the salary cap. It's as easy as that. Clubs can spend what they want. I know Bruce disagrees with
that. I disagree. Respectfully.
Well, mate,
it's good, but it's good to have these debates.
You can't get rid of the... For me, get rid of the cap, fantastic. But you can't get rid of the cap
without
if there's not
relegation.
A stick. For under,
well, hopefully that's coming.
Or under investing.
That's coming. Second division.
2034.
Bring it on.
Hopefully before then. Anyway, the talks are certainly moving forward on that one. A final question from Chris Giblin. Do you know what City's lease arrangement or length is with Amy Park? Would there be a chance they would build a stadium out near their training base in Bundoora to give them that geographical difference? For mine, I don't think they need to do that. I think Amy Park is the kind of stadium we like. It's a boutique. Perfect football venue. They just got to work harder to get people inside there.
Well, I mean, exactly right.
They don't need to build a new stadium for $200 million.
I mean, you look at other codes, you know, they play in the same stadiums.
AC Milan and Inter Milan do as well.
AC Milan and Inter, that was my next example. Yeah. They play in the same stadium.
Yeah, but that's a rarity, in fairness, in Europe and South America. They normally have their own stadiums.
Sure, but does City need to spend $200 million on a new stadium?
Or South America. We've got to know where we stand right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Eventually, fantastic. Yeah, let's do that. Mm. But in this day and age and the way the landscape is at the moment, Stay in that Amy Park. It's a fantastic stadium.
Perfect.
You can stay there, but to Simon's point, give people a reason to come and watch you because guess what, guys? There's 20-plus thousand going every week to watch Melbourne Victory and there's 5-odd thousand come and watch you guys. Something's amiss.
Good question from Chris Giblin. Thank you very much. Let's just have a quick look at what's happening on the weekend in the A-League. Plenty games to excite us. It starts on Friday night. Melbourne City against Brisbane Roar. They need a bounce back. Newcastle against Western Sydney. If there are any chance of making the finals, the Jets, they've got to win that one, of course. Yep. A big blue we can't wait for, which we've spoken about. Sydney FC, Melbourne Victory on Saturday night at the SCG. Adelaide Wellington's all of a sudden a really big game at Cooper Stadium. Really big game in terms of the finals and laying down a marker like the Victory did. And then Central Coast Perth Glory, Central Coast Stadium. Another chance for the Glory to get back to winning ways after their loss, but just to flex their muscle a bit ahead of the finals as well. So actually a really good weekend coming up.
Absolutely. And obviously highlighted by that big blue. And of course, because Perth don't play until the Sunday, depending on what happens between Sydney FC and Victory, Perth will essentially, I mean, they know what they've got to do now, but, you know, they could be almost over the line if they win on Sunday and there's, say, for example, a draw in the other game.
Mm. Make sure you tune in for Footballed on Wednesday with Murray Shaw, Andy Harper and Brenton Speed. That'll keep you going ahead of the weekend, of course. Bruce Chatey, Simon Hill, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Garby.
Thanks, cheers, Bruce. Me.
Thanks to everyone for listening, as you usually do. We appreciate the support and hopefully that's got you through your commute wherever you were going and got you through your week. Thanks so much for your company. Speak to you next week.